Hi, my name is Mike Gibbs. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar about going after those whales, those big fish. Large clients can be an entirely different species than smaller clients, and how you get one into your boat can take a lot more time and effort. We're lucky to have a couple of experts who have caught their fair share of large clients with us today to share their insights. And I promise that I'm also all done with the fishing and seafood metaphors. This isn't an episode of Deadliest Catch. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Cornerstone Support. You'll get the chance to hear more about the company a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the RM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, including the Daily Digest email newsletter and the Getting to Know weekly profile, as well as hosts webinars like this one and delivers information across a multitude of communication channels. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Misty Carson is the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing at MRS CPO LLC, which means she leads the sales and marketing team at the company. Over the past 21 years in the contact center industry, she has accumulated extensive experience in outbound and inbound contact center solutions, including telesales, customer service, first-party collections, and third-party recovery. Her background includes leadership roles in operations, client services, and sales. She's partnered with many Fortune 100 clients in multiple verticals, including financial services, auto deficiency, fintech and marketplace lending, private student lending, cable telecom, utilities, and medical. She joined MRS in 2010 as Vice President of Sales, and holds a bachelor's degree from West Virginia University. Go Mountaineers. Joe Gelbard is the Chief Revenue Officer at True Accord, a high-growth fintech business disrupting the collections industry as we know it. True Accord uses machine learning and automation to optimize the collections process for some of the world's largest financial institutions. Prior to joining True Accord, Joe was one of the first team members at Livevox and served as the Executive Vice President of Sales. Unfortunately, Ed Sala is not able to be with us today. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by me. We encourage you to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And with that, let's start our discussion. First, I thought it'd be best maybe to set the table. So, Joe, I'm going to ask you a pretty broad question. How would you define a large client, or what would you define to be a large client?
I would define it as a large, complex organization with multiple decision makers across a wide variety of internal functions at the institution. And that's kind of what it like. And then the way that we evaluate it would be how much net revenue they can spend with us on a monthly basis.
And yeah, I agree with Joe completely. And typically within that realm, as you mentioned, Mike, it's a Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 client. Obviously, in a lot of different industries within the U.S. with where we're partnering. But like Joe said, from a revenue standpoint, we kind of look at it as the monthly forward flow of volume or accounts that may be sourced to us. So that could be from a first or third party accounts receivables.
Okay, that's a very helpful start. So does that mean that each collection agency will have a baseline for what that, you know, sort of what that revenue or what that month, you know, that monthly income is likely to be to define a large client? I mean, is it something that's sort of like a different definition? You know, I may define it as $50,000, and Joe, you may define it as $100, and Misty, you may define it as $250,000. Is it okay that there's sort of that difference, that's somewhat subjective to it? And Joe, I'll ask you first.
Sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, absolutely. Sorry, Mike. I think it varies, and it definitely varies if you look at the different industry sectors that we partner with today. And as we go and work in new industry verticals, definitely there's flexibility within in that realm. So what we look at, and typically when you start partnering with a larger client, you're not going to receive the largest amount of market share or forward flow volume. So at MRS, we're not going to start with a benchmark and say that it has to be 50,000 accounts per month. We won't set a quantitative value, but we'll look at the opportunity for growth and a partnership with that client.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of these large opportunities across the board, doesn't matter what industry you're working with, make you earn it. And so out of the gate, they're not going to be they're not going to place as much business with you as they would once you've proven yourself over a period of time. And on top of that, you have to look at, if you're breaking into a new market, you don't have the same track record that you may in a market where you're well established. So you have to look, you have to evaluate the opportunity and project, okay, let's assume we're going to be as successful in this new market as we have been in others. But to get started, our threshold for number of accounts placed is going to be lower in the beginning.
Is that process different with a large client than what you'll see with, someone who would sort of fit the definition of a smaller client? I mean, or is it roughly sort of the same kind of startup process with either type of client, regardless of the size of business that might be coming in the door?
More upfront work, especially in our case, with larger clients, because not only do they have more complex requirements and more parties on their end that are involved in the decision making process, but they're also evaluating, in True Accord's case, they're evaluating something that's relatively new to the market. It's less new than it used to be, but they're things that we need to go through that they've never gone through before. And so they need to get comfortable. So that process takes longer, and we're going to be more willing and able, frankly, to invest upfront in that process with a larger client than we would with a smaller client, because at the the larger clients just have so much more business to bring to us. So we're willing to make that upfront investment.
And I think on our side, from a development perspective, once we start with the interface, there are similarities in that respect between a small client and a larger client. But also, like Joe said, the larger clients, and as we kind of dive into more of the questions, the larger clients do involve a lot more response as far as the information that we're providing and with the interface. So the setup would be different in that regards. And then the investment from a partnership standpoint is definitely greater with the larger clients.
Let's start to break down the process. We've talked about more stakeholders, more work. Obviously, that probably likely also means a longer sales cycle. Can you give us a sense of how long a sales cycle can go or can possibly extend to when you're looking at a larger client?
I'm interested in Misty's answer.
Sure, Joe. And this one, I would say when I started, as you mentioned, Mike, I started initially in sales back in the telesales and customer customer service industry and the care environment, and then crossed over to the ARM industry around 2007. So when I started in the industry, I would have said an average sales cycle could have been, you know, 8 to 12 months. And that was with a larger client. However, today I'm seeing that you may partner with a whale, and that could take 4 to 5 years or more to close that deal. So the high end is like the 4 to 7 years, and the low end is 1 to 2 years. That's probably one of the hardest questions, you know, if you interview a sales candidate. That's a really difficult question. But the variance exists because where the client might be in their new vendor selection process. So are they actively looking for a new partner, or are they kicking the tires around? And it's really up to the salesperson to see where that client is in the sales cycle. And in that partnership, and I call it a partnership even when you're not partnering, because through that cycle, it's up to the salesperson to understand, okay, when might, and when I say RFP, request for proposal, when may that formal process kick off? Is there an on-site due diligence meeting that will be required that might be with the information security team, compliance team? I think it's really important too, when you're partnering with a large client, to go to their office, you know, as their time permits, have those face-to-face meetings and be very collaborative about what are their pain points? You know, what can you do to help that partner with the pain in their organization?
Well, TrueAccord hasn't been around for four or five, we've only been around for 5 years. So sales process is definitely not longer than that. we tend to, a couple points, and I agree with most of what Misty said, all the things apply a little differently to us. One of which is, we're in the, maybe call it 12-month range, but it's, you know, the process never really ends, because as we talked about earlier, you get started with a certain amount of business and you have to really earn it. And then once you earn it, you're aiming to earn more as you go. And that's, we're talking about large clients here. So there's more and more opportunity. So the sales process just really never ends in that sense. And I think that also, what, you know, in our case, because a lot of what we do, not all of it, but a lot of what we do is different. It's imperative for us to, organize. We will always go visit clients, but we also want clients to come visit us, because it's when they get on site and see how we operate that they can really wrap their arms around how different we are, how similar and different we are. And sometimes that process alone takes a really, really long time just to coordinate getting people to you know, the right people to come and see us.
Absolutely. And definitely, when I mentioned going to visit the client, Joe, that's typically a formal process within the client's RFP or request for proposal phase. But then also many of the clients come on site. And I think that's key as well, to see the culture of the business with the on site visit. I agree.
Yeah, people tend to like to come visit San Francisco on Thursday and Friday, shockingly, and then wind up staying for the weekend. So sometimes our visits cover, you know, a Friday and then a Monday.
Yeah, we don't see that as much in New Jersey, but occasionally the Philadelphia is pretty historical. So we might get a few weekend visitors if there's a game in town.
Location, 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 I guess. At this point, I'd like to pause the discussion and read a few words about our sponsor of today's webinar, that's Cornerstone Support. Over the past 20 years, Cornerstone Support has become the premier licensing service for collection agencies, debt buyers, and attorneys. Cornerstone Support's expert compliance service include licensing, bonding, and insurance, and making it a one-stop shop. On the licensing side, Cornerstone facilitates the entire licensing process from the preparation of the application to the approved state license. As part of its services, Cornerstone will generate and complete all necessary applications, supplements, and questionnaires. In addition, they set up they will set up registered agents, resident managers, and remote offices as required. The dedicated team is committed to meeting your client's specific need, or your, you know, its client's specific needs with quality service and expertise. Bonds are a critical part of the licensing process. They are proud to be the trusted bonding service for hundreds of collection agencies around the globe. Unlike general surety bond agencies, Cornerstone specializes in collection agency bonds. They work with a wide variety of surety companies and have great solutions for all types of companies, small and large, old and new, and everything in between. They also write mortgage servicer and lender bonds, court bonds, notary bonds, contract and performance bonds, fidelity bonds, and many more. You can trust Cornerstone support to provide world-class customer service and competitive rates for all of your surety bond needs. Lastly, Integrity First Insurance, or their sister company, specializes in insurance coverage for the arm industry. They offer exclusive errors and omissions programs designed to defend consumer lawsuits. They shop the market to compare options and make certain that you have the best value each year in terms of coverage, price, and deductible. No other insurance agent can provide this level of comprehensive service and expertise with your E&O coverage, which is a critical line of defense against consumer lawsuits. Cornerstone also offers other coverage lines for your business, including cyber liability to cover data breaches. Cornerstone support provides a level of comprehensive service and expertise that is unparalleled in the industry. And thanks to Cornerstone Support for sponsoring today's webinar. Now, let's resume our discussion. One thing I'd like to maybe ask and see if there's any difference is, does the type of debt matter when attempting to sell into a larger prospective client, meaning the type of debt or the type of, the type of loan or whatever that you're trying to get from your prospective client? Misty, I'll ask you first this time.
Sure, definitely, Mike. Our opinion is yes. Since the CFPB was created, the banks, we're seeing the banks, auto lenders, and the larger financial institutions have, historically, we've seen more stringent requirements as it relates to compliance and information security. However, in more recent years, with some of the audits and some of the compliance processes that we're going through in our due diligence questionnaires, we're seeing a lot of that also true in different industries and sectors, such as telecommunications, utilities, and then medical. But with that, we think it's just important from a due diligence process to have all of that information that you need through the due diligence with your security certifications, your information security, and compliance management process. Once you have that, then regardless of the industry, you should be set to go after a larger client based on any requirements that they have.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add. I think Misty covered pretty much everything there.
That's okay. I'll put you on the spot now with something different. So what do you think larger clients are looking for? What are you seeing from larger clients? When it comes to the you know, you mentioned the sort of the more complex that the deals can be. What are you seeing from larger clients from a compliance standpoint?
That's a really good question. One topic that comes up frequently is the ability to adapt to changing regulation, and obviously regulation continues to evolve at a federal, state, even local level in some cases. And so being able to adhere to new policies or new regulation rapidly, and how do you think about it, how do you go about it, how do you train agents in which we do, and then how do you make changes to, in our case, the machine learning engine? So that's a really lengthy, deep conversation that spans multiple, you know, multiple different divisions within a large institution for us. I think in some cases it's people are just interested in how we work and how things come together for True Accord, because they may not have experienced working with, or they have not experienced working with a company like ours. However, that is a big topic of conversation. The other is that they want to not only know that you have a compliance team that is you know, forward thinking and proactive, but that it's that the bench is really deep, you know, that you've been able to handle complex situations in the past. So as a high level example would be, you know, if you work with banks, the you know, the subsequent banks that you work with want to understand how you manage the complexities of the previous large. So if you work with top 10 banks, then, you know, the next one that you work with really wants to understand how you're managing all of the complexities with the other banks, without getting names, and in particular how you're, you know, then you can break apart what's unique about a new client and how you would manage these particular, and you know, that cuts across a lot of different groups within our company. But they want to know, they're very interested in how you can manage compliance. One of the things that we haven't mentioned with large companies is that, you know, they do want to partner and work hard, but they're almost forced to be very unforgiving. You know, they can't accept a lot of mistakes because at the end of the day, they suffer the consequences too. So they want to be very confident going into a relationship or going into placing the accounts that you're going to be able to handle everything in a compliant way. So in the sales process, they spend a lot of time with our compliance team.
Absolutely. And I would just add to what Joe was saying with the compliance and the regulation that we're seeing from the different regulatory bodies as it relates to the local and state. And then obviously what we might see when the new CFPB rules come out, there's a lot of energy and excitement around omni-channel servicing and support. And also, like Joe was saying, as you partner with the big banks and the institutions, there's a lot of us investing a lot of time and energy and money in the omni-channel servicing. And then just looking at our partners and then also the compliance around that as it relates to email, chat, SMS, electronic communication, where we know that's how a lot of our customers prefer to be contacted.
You're saying you're getting a lot more or that sort of omni-channel platform is becoming more frequent topic in the conversations you're having with larger clients?
Absolutely. It's something that they're the larger clients are obviously already doing that in-house. So as they're looking to an outsourcing company, they're looking at us to have the same level of support, because the majority of our customers aren't really wild about, you know, answering their phone, whether it's a cell phone, and most people do not have a link. So omni-channel is definitely very critical today. And as we move forward, will be even more critical in the future.
Misty's giving my pitch.
Well, I was just going to come back to you. I know, you know, True Accord, you know, it really emphasizes, you know, email, text, you know, website versus making calls. Are you seeing that as well? And, you know, in the conversations you're having?
Well, yeah, but that's because those are the only conversations we have. We're not really set up to make a lot of phone calls anyway. So, We couldn't have that conversation if we wanted to. But taking a step back, the number of conversations that we're having is, you know, has the velocity of those has really picked up, and really across the board. And I think it's partially because, you know, if it's just you use banks as an example, they really understand what they're, or they have a good sense of what their consumers want, and that would be, you know, more of an omni-channel experience where you can sort of layer in preference and how they want to communicate and give them more flexibility with when and you know, when and how. But on top of that, we've seen a lot more. So some of the largest, you know, businesses in the world, as you can imagine, are a little bit risk averse. They're not all risk averse. So when you get started and someone's the first one through the door, and then there's a, then others start to follow, that's the stage we're in, and doing a lot of large and diverse implementations with people who want a digital omni-channel experience for their consumers, and are just more comfortable because they've you know, heard from colleagues in the industry, or you know, heard us talk at various conferences or things of that nature, are just much more comfortable now and are moving aggressively to find an omni-channel experience for their that are in a, you know, in a collections environment.
Okay, we've talked about compliance and communication. Let me change the topic slightly. What are larger clients looking for? Are they looking for anything differently than smaller clients from a reporting standpoint? Is the type of information that they're looking for you to send back to them any different than what you're normally seeing with smaller clients? And Misty, I'd like you to tackle that one first.
Sure. Yeah, I don't mind at all. So my quote we're seeing there is a lot of customization that the clients are looking for. At one point in time, you know, as a salesperson, you could potentially look to your experienced IT staff and have, you know, a list of reporting that you could provide for the client. But in today's environment with the larger clients, that customization is critical. So it is important to have a very experienced IT, like we have MRS on site, that can customize the client performance reporting to showcase the results that the client is looking to see. So we know what the really common key performance indicators are, such as liquidation and dollars collected, but it's not that simple anymore. Now we need more analytics around the data. So as we just spoke about the omni-channel servicing, if that's an option for the client, then we need to provide the detail for that from an analytics perspective to see if a payment maybe arrived from an email that we sent the customer, if it was something that evolved from chat, or if it was a web payment. Also at MRS, obviously phone dialing, especially inbound dialing, is extremely critical for us. So there we need to provide detail as well as far as the average payment size. How many times has the customer called in? Are they responding to an email? Did we send the customer a letter? So that customization will come in pretty detailed with a lot of the reporting that is requested from our clients. And I think from an IT and a technological development perspective, we have to be pretty nimble to customize the reporting for that particular client.
Yeah, it never shocks me that if you take two banks, from the outside looking in, they do the same thing. They issue credit. They have a lot of similarities from that perspective. But then when you work with them, the differences are vast, and the things that they're interested in and things that are necessary for them to, you know, that we need to do to satisfy their needs. It's almost like there's two different industries. So you do need to be nimble, and also set expectations, because you know, once you start to customize really anything for people, then, you know, if there are no limitations, they'll continue to come back and ask for more and more. And in some cases it is a business need, and so you have to, you know, define what it is and the time frame and work towards a common goal to deliver it. And other times it can be more of a, hey, we'd be really interested in this data. And then it just becomes more of a prioritization exercise to determine what the actual need is, and, you know, the time frame in which you need to turn it around.
I definitely agree with Joe. I think when you're in that new client development phase for the onboarding or the implementation, it's definitely important to understand what reporting is required, data elements that we need to develop within our interface. When it's an afterthought, like Joe said, after the program is up and running, it's definitely more challenging from a technical standpoint to go back and develop that. It can absolutely be done, but it's definitely puts a little more pain on the organization. So to understand those data requirements is really key during that implementation phase.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground so far, and we're just about only halfway through. So what I wanted to do now maybe is just sort of take a step back, and you know, looking at all the things we've talked about: compliance, technology, reporting, you know, the longer sales cycle, the complexity, the specificity that you get from certain, you know, every client, you know, a snowflake kind of situation. Maybe let's sort of highlight, you know, what are the most important components that a collection agency needs to have in order to be able to start this process of selling into a larger type of customer? And Joe, I'll give you the honor of the first question or first answer this time.
Really, it's structure and having the proper structure to be able to work with these behemoths, because they really do need to know your entire organization. In some ways, sales is you know, you're maybe the tip of the spear, so to speak, and are the quarterback. But they really need to understand, they really need to know your operations team and how your operations team functions. They need to understand how your compliance team functions. And, you know, how, you know, in our case, we have a very large product management team, which is probably different than most traditional collection agencies. And so they need to understand how the product management team functions, and they need to understand how our data science team functions. And so wrapping that all into a package that you can actually present to them so that they're comfortable. And that's really the structure and how you present yourselves to, you know, to a really large really large complex organization that has different decision-making elements or factions within, you know, if you you know, you look at a bank. And so how do you know, take the structure that you do have, make sure that it's, you know, you have a very solid foundation, and introduce that to the company so that they're comfortable with all the things that they need to be comfortable with in order to place business with you. And, you know, like we spend a lot of time you know, it's not just the sales team talking to, a bank. It's all of the groups that I mentioned and coordinating that so that, again, like the key is that these banks who are heavily regulated feel comfortable that they can, you know, that when they place accounts with you, that you're going to take care of them.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with Joe and all of that, his points that he's made. And with just diving into some of that detail, I think also too, the large clients are looking for that documentation. So maybe after you've had your introductory meeting and you start providing company policies around all the different business controls that you have within your organization, from compliance, training, customer experience, quality, the reporting that we mentioned, and then also, like Joe said, the organization as it relates to the different teams that you have. When the client comes on site or you go there, they do want to meet your team and not just the sales person at that point. And then also they want to see that assurance that you truly are an extension of their brand. And within all the documentation and all of the information that you provide, that at the end of the day, they do have that level of comfort with your organization.
So you're saying it takes a village to land a large client?
Absolutely. And every team member, when we do have a client that comes on site, you know, to our New Jersey office, you know, it's really critical when we throw out different dates that we have the executive team, key leadership individuals within the organization, because we do a tour and we always joke that it's the 3-hour tour, like Gilligan's Island, because so much information is covered during that tour. But it's really critical for the larger client to see that they're going to be well taken care of.
Sometimes I feel more like a travel agent than a chief revenue officer, trying to coordinate everybody's visits and making sure that we have all the necessary parties to talk to them when they're here. It's a big coordination effort.
Let's talk about the sales process now that we've sort of established what the framework is. How is it different? You know, my question that I was going to ask is, how is the sales process different with larger clients than with smaller ones? We did get a question that came in a little while ago that had, you know, that asked any input on sales approaches, which is maybe a better way to ask it. So, you know, if you're reaching out to a, you know, I've identified I'm going to sell to, you know, Bank of America or Wells Fargo or, you know, Anthem Healthcare. What's the you know, can you give me a sense of maybe what the process is on how you start that approach?
Sure. Do you want me to go first, Joe?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, absolutely. We all know that the larger clients are getting multiple phone calls, excuse me, emails multiple times per day. So that when we do speak with someone, whether it's at a conference or a trade show, or if it is a phone conversation, it's really imperative through that sales cycle that we have done our research on that organization. And we may potentially know what some of the pain points are, or definitely we know within that industry what the pain points are. So it's really important when you have that first conversation, if it's only a 5-minute conversation, that you're really well prepared to speak with that individual. And I know, Mike, you gave an example at Bank of America. So you've researched and you know what content that you want to provide. I think it's also important, and Joe touched on this before, to attend the industry conferences that offer educational and informative sessions for agencies and creditors in our industry. We can learn so much. At some of those conferences, I know the MRS team, we will speak, and like Joe mentioned, True Accord does as well. So that's also encouraged. And it's not always the salesperson that's speaking. So whoever the subject matter expert is within your organization, to offer to speak at those industry conferences, it's really critical. Well, I think the days of the aggressive cold calling, those days are over. And I know when a client calls me or contacts me, I will often ask them, you know, why did you call me back? Or why, you know, once you get to that point of the conversation, because I think it's important to understand, you know, what value that you brought, whether it was in a voicemail or an email, and they actually called you back, or, you know, what are some of the key components that those clients want. But I have heard, you know, from a lot of larger clients that they really turn away from the aggressive sales approach. And in today's environment, it definitely is one that is much more collaborative.
Yeah, when you're selling to an enterprise, you have to be able to sell wide and deep into that enterprise and know a lot of different people and really sort of have a very good understanding of what the decision-making process is. But part of that is finding out who your champion is and who can really champion your cause. Because for all of these large organizations to bring on a new client or bring on a new agency, it's a lot of work. And so they really need to believe in you. And what I find is that no matter how exciting your presentation can be and how interesting they may find you, when you leave the room, there's always going to be some detractors. So if you have a champion, if you have someone that has a lot of influence and can push ideas through, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be successful, but it gives you the absolute best chance. And if you don't have that person, then, you know, you need to find that person. It's not going to go well. Because again, there are a lot of people that are making decisions, a lot of people that have relationships. And as Misty said, a lot of people that are calling in to try and develop those relationships. So you really need someone who can walk you through the organization and help you figure out who who you need to talk to, who you need to convince, what questions may be asked when you're not in the room. And without it, I just don't really consider it without someone that's willing to do that, I don't really think we're in a position of being successful.
I agree with Joe. And sometimes just as far as having that champion or the influencer within the organization, I think sometimes in a larger organization, you may even need one or two of those individuals, and they're kind of like your coach, and they tell you, you know, what you need to do. And when you have one meeting, okay, well, you know, Misty, you didn't provide this. So I completely agree with Joe, and it may not just be one person. It could be even a couple people within that organization.
Yeah, or a team that really has your back and wants this to work and will basically tell you how to be successful within their unique organization.
So how do you find that champion, or how do you identify that champion?
That's a good question. I think too, you know, the more interaction involvement that you have in the industry, the more that you meet people. And I know sometimes when I go to conferences, I'll just sit down and start talking to people. And it could be, you know, I'm chatting with someone, you know, like yourself, Mike, who's on the media side, or, you know, just an organization or an industry champion. And then sometimes you're speaking with someone, I may chat with Joe, you know, someone at another agency, but then sometimes you're sitting down and chatting with the creditor. So through the interaction that you have in the conferences and in different organizations, that's where you build your own relationships, and you find those champions through that involvement and interaction within the industry.
You also have to be able to ask difficult questions, because otherwise you can find yourself spinning your wheels. So if you're trying to find out who the person is, you know, you can be as forward as asking them if they are the right person to make the decision or to explain how the decision gets made. And then, you know, then you have a better chance of figuring it out. I always think that you're better off hearing no. No, there's nothing wrong with no, because people can, change their minds. And obviously, if you're diligent about it, you'll stay in front of them, but in front of the person. But when you kind of get strung along, that's like just a waste of time, because there's plenty of people to go talk to. So like, no isn't the worst. Isn't the worst scenario. It might be no right now and yes in 6 months. But the worst is when you just kind of drag it out. You really don't have you don't have insight into their process, and you don't have insight into when something could potentially happen, or if you're talking to the right person. So I think you have to be pretty aggressive in a polite way to figure out if there is a chance. And I always find that when you're in a sales scenario, people do want to help you. They would like to help you, for the most part. That's not 100% the case, but in general, people want to be helpful. So you can just tell them, look, if this isn't a fit right now, totally understand. That would be one way to, you know, figure out if you're onto the right person, or if it's the timing's right, or just ask, like, you know, who do we need to talk to figure out if this is a good fit between our company and yours.
Absolutely. And then, kind of like Joe was saying, to have that patience, I think, within the sales cycle. So, you know, not to be annoying, but to have the follow-up with that individual once you determine who that is.
Let's talk about the first impression. Decision makers are busy. We're all busy. You know, as we mentioned, they're being inundated with people who want to sell them or get their business. What, you know, without giving away, you know, maybe any state secrets, any tips or insights into how you go about making that strong first impression to try and get your foot in the door?
I think you always want to do a webinar with accounts recovery.
Great answer. Love it.
how you get started. Something Misty said earlier, which is being thoughtful about what you're presenting to the people, is really important, and being prepared and understanding, you never fully understand their business until you sit down and talk to them, but showing that you've put the effort in, no matter if you're a traditional agency who makes a lot of phone calls, or if you're a company like ours who does things quite a bit differently, that's you need to bring a level of respect to the table. And I really believe people sitting across from you appreciate when you've tried to stand their business to the best of your ability.
Definitely. I agree with Joe. And like I said, you know, doing your homework before the meeting. And then once you get to that meeting, whether it is, a web session, a go-to meeting, or if you go on site, or if you're building, listening as well, being a really good listener through that process. And again, understanding what the business needs are, and just being very diligent in trying to collaborate and partner with the client.
We got a question that came in that sort of fits in with this topic. I'm interested to hear on the use of lead generation offered by outside companies that can help you sign up for RFPs, which I see mostly for the healthcare and government verticals. Have either of you had any experience with that, or have any feedback on using those types of services?
Well, I'll answer really quickly. We don't. We have an inside, or we have a team, our growth team, that manages a lot of that for us. We also we're very, very busy with the verticals we're focused on. So, and I don't believe an outside lead gen team would be particularly helpful, and definitely not as helpful as the inside team that we have, our growth team. And we don't focus on healthcare and government right now. So I'm not sure if it would work in those areas, but maybe Misty has an answer.
Yeah, actually my answer is very similar to Joe. We have an inside sales team that does lead generation and prospecting. We do interface with a few providers that offer data like DMB. So from that perspective, we can get a lot of great information, but the lead generation and the prospecting occurs from our in-house sales team. And then from a healthcare perspective, healthcare is our smallest vertical that we're servicing today. However, again, it would be any prospecting and lead gen would be from our internal sales team.
Okay, we've now sort of taking our hypothetical sales process. We found the right person. We've made a good first impression. We're kind of in the door. We're, you know, sort of step one or two of a, you know, what could be a multi-year process. Over the course of that process, what are sort of the likely stumbling blocks that you see, or that you can, you know, a collection agency can expect to see as they navigate through these larger clients?
I think Joe already touched on this one. The biggest thing that I see is just the timing. So you have the client, you're in that cycle, but where are you in their new vendor selection process? So again, I've mentioned several times, a lot of our clients do operate within an RFP cycle where they may send one out every couple years potentially. So where you are in that sales cycle with that particular client. And then recognizing too, I actually like to run, and in our organization, we use an analogy. You have to sometimes look at it as more of a marathon, if you will, and it's not really a sprint to the finish line. Once you get into that RFP cycle, things will start moving a little bit quicker, but you need to have some patience through the process.
Yeah, and typically stumbling blocks are, you know, you don't fall off the cliff, so to speak. They're more just, you know, things might slow you down, and there's a wide range. I mean, you could have it's kind of shocking to me at this stage of where we are, but. Not just TrueCore, but in general, that some banks don't really understand the cloud, and elements of your business may be in the cloud, whether you use a vendor that is cloud based, or, you know, use Amazon Web Services, and you have to take a step back and reassure people that data is safe, and you know, that again, like, that's just an example of a stumbling block, not something that really will kill a deal, but, you know, need to get, you know, your CTO to discuss how something works with their IT team, and, you know, then you're sort of back in that coordination role, and in some cases it can take 2-3 weeks or a month to do it, and, you know, that's just the delay, but it's a frustrating one.
Yeah, and sometimes when you have those conversations, like Joe mentioned, you know, with us, it would be our chief risk and security would have the conversations. So Michael would not only have those conversations with the technical contact, but then it also seems like with the banks, it goes through a legal and compliance review. So you may have multiple conversations, like Joe was saying, around the technology or the way you operate, you know, within your infrastructure.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time, but before I get to the last question, my next to last question, I guess, and if anybody has any other questions, please type them in now and we'll try and get to it. How do you go about finding the right contact? I guess you probably should have asked this at the start of the sales cycle, but, you know, is there a type of person or a type of title that somebody should be looking for, you know, when you're looking to make, you know, sort of make that first step into a larger type of company?
I think part of that gets back to all these companies are a little bit different, and some of them have grade inflation. Like everybody in the organization is a vice president, which makes it a little challenging. But generally speaking, it's best to aim for the you know, the most senior people, and really start with them, because, you know, they may not do the day-to-day work on it, but they really have to have an understanding of your organization, because they're putting, you know, especially in our case when it's something new that they may be doing, they're putting their name on it. And if it's not the right time for us, we don't have that person, we try to bow out as gracefully as possible until we really are able to convince the top people that this is a great, you know, a great opportunity, a great idea.
Right. And typically I was, you know, historically I would be targeting, you know, the director, the vice president or senior level in collections. However, with the new tech and alternative lending, you know, there's definitely some variety there with the organizations as far as who the decision maker is. But in attending the industry conferences, you typically run across a lot of the decision makers within the industry.
Well, we've reached the top of the hour, but before I let either one of the speakers off the hook, even though they've done an awesome job, but I'd like to give them, ask them to do is maybe share any sort of last parting words of wisdom or any last tips that they want to share with the audience before we let them go. So Missy, if you don't mind, I'd like to give you that chance.
Well, yeah, first I'd like to definitely thank you, Mike, for the opportunity, and then also great to serve on the panel with you today. As far as just parting information into the group, I would just like to be really solid and diligent in your sales cycle process, to definitely know your audience and playing with that prospect, and then to not be afraid to get engaged in different organizations within the industry as far as public opportunities, joining a panel like we did today, or participating in a speaking opportunity at a conference.
Thank you, Mike and Misty. The one piece that Misty didn't cover, that I talked about, is really finding the you know, working hard to find the you know, the right person or people who can help make a decision for you, so that you again, I think the worst is not the worst answer. The worst is the delay and just ongoing without having any clarity into how you can be successful. So really finding the champion or the group of people that can champion your cause.
Excellent. Well, before I let everyone go, I want to thank Misty and Joe for their insights and their time today. Definitely, I mean it when I say this webinar would not have been possible without their participation. There, I got it. Thank you. I also want to thank Cornerstone Support for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.cornerstonesupport.com to learn more about the company, or call 888-650-3240 for more information. Thanks to everybody who registered and participated today. Thanks to everybody who asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.